This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Fay. How are you?
Well, I'm surviving the heat. I'm not happy about the heat, but, you know, it's here and I'm here, so I have to deal with it.
I think it was not that long ago, just a few months ago, when it was still kind of rainy and still kind of cold over there, that we talked about, and we had said, geez, it seems like a really wet spring. Can't wait till we get into summer. And here we are.
And here we are. And it's hotter than it's been in years. And here we are just saying, are we going to survive this?
I know.
It. You know, how bad can it get?
And how long can this go on? What, you're at, what, 3 weeks?
Yes, I think 3 weeks. That's what I've counted.
Jeez. I don't understand. I mean, this gets into like really dangerous territory when we get this hot for this long.
I think so too. I don't know how many people have died, but I know there's several that have died from heat incidents, as they call them.
Jeez. You know, you wake up, your starting temperature is what, 85, something like that. When you get into that, golly, it's just no relief in sight, no rain, no break in temperatures. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, if rain would come, it would certainly cool things down and make it very nice, you know.
Yeah.
That would be a great blessing right now.
It would. I'm starting to get those flashbacks to last summer. I'm hoping that doesn't happen. Golly.
And everybody tells me this is the first time in 7 years, and I didn't remember when the last heat wave was.
7 years.
That's what everybody says.
Man, I just don't understand. It's just it seems like every season we have the same thing happen. It's just some weird thing that we don't ever remember happening, or some weird, you know, weather event that hasn't happened in like a century, or it's just all of a sudden one weird weather thing happens every season. It's really bizarre. It makes you wonder.
I know. And, you know, at night it's been like 84, 86.
Yeah.
And then the daytime, you know, like minimum of 104. And the heat wave feels like, they said the other day, it felt like 130.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. You can cook eggs and bacon in that kind of temperatures.
Oh, my gosh, yes. It's going to be 102 today.
Jeez. I mean, that is so dangerous. It's bad for people. It's bad for dogs and animals and cattle and horses.
Yeah, the chance of rain is 6%.
Ooh. Wow, a whopping
6%. I just thought I'd mention that.
Oh, that's
6%.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on any rain falling from the sky today.
I don't think so. And the real feel today will be a lot more than that.
Yeah. Oh, geez. You just keep, one of these days we're going to have a conversation and you're going to say, hey, guess what? We only got up to 98 today, and it's going to be a celebration.
It'll be a cool day, won't it?
Yeah.
Very cool, yeah.
A day when you're not in the triple digits, we'll throw parties.
People will be out in the streets. I mean, oh, my gosh. But you know what? The water parks are doing a land office business.
Oh.
All the little kids are at water parks. If they're like us and have their own, you know, they don't have to go out. But it's just so hot. The little kids can't even do it in the afternoon. They could play in the mornings on the water slide, but the afternoons is way too hot.
I know it. I remember, you know, like a couple of months ago, you were talking about how you're going to get the water slide for the house for the kids, and then you went through the whole process of how to install it and all that, and then you finally got up, and then it's like they used it what, once or twice, and then the heat wave hit.
It got too hot. We couldn't even let them on it. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
What are the odds of that happening?
I don't know. I mean, if it's in my house, anything can go wrong.
Yeah.
Anything.
Jeez. Well, that's – but they do use it in the morning, though, right, before it gets really
– Yes, they can do it in the morning before it gets so terribly hot, because they'll burn to a crisp if they were out there in that hot sun. But at 104 degrees.
Jeez.
So, they do it in the mornings and they turn it off.
So they do the home water slide in the morning and then in the afternoon go to the water park. Is that right?
That's right. Then they go to the big water park, you know. They've got umbrellas over a lot of stuff, a lot of shade, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, lifeguards, safety procedures, lots of fun things to do. Good.
Yes.
Well, geez.
Can you imagine if you were a kid in this day and age when everything is available? My gosh, it's changed a lot.
I know it. Man.
I mean, used to kids just went fishing, rode their bikes down the street. They went and got some ice cream. I mean, times have changed.
Yeah. We didn't have a whole lot of stuff to do. We had to use our imagination and
that's
our
right.
friends and whatever was handy. Now
that's right, and everybody would hang out all day, and now if kids don't have a lot to do outside, they get bored.
Yes.
yeah
they don't have
and
a very
I shake my head no they have no imagination whatsoever.
You ought to suggest to them, hand them a stick and say, here, back in the old days we would play for 8 hours with this. Have at it. Go.
They wouldn't even understand that, I assure you.
They'd look at you like you had three heads.
Yeah, they would. Wow. They would not know what to think, I can assure you.
Times have changed. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. You know, I'm getting hoarse.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds like it to me.
It's all this dry
sure
weather. Goodness, it's the heat.
Maybe that's what it is. My voice has changed.
It's kind of cool. I like those things. But that's I'm coming at it from a different perspective. So
yes, you're coming from an entirely different world there. Well, I've got to tell you something funny.
Okay.
I had people from out of town. Into the office this week. I was working with him, and the first thing I noticed, the man came in. He had a little dog with him. It's a Pomeranian, beautiful little dog, brown and white, you know, like a honey color. And he said, "My dog goes everywhere I go." I said, "Okay." So he was there a couple hours, and he said, "I'm starving. Can we go eat?" I said, "No, I'm too busy to go eat. But let me order you something from Norma's. You know, that's the go-to place." So I ordered him this nice lunch, meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and carrots.
Oh.
So I take him in the conference room, and the little dog immediately barks, and he's hungry too. He fixes him a plate with meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and carrots. I've never seen this in my lifetime. And he says, "Oh, no, he eats what I eat." I go, "Carrots? Mashed potatoes and meatloaf?" And the little dog, he wanted more and more. I mean, he loved this meatloaf, and he kept asking him for more. I mean, I've never seen this in my life. I mean, I've never had a dog at the office. I mean, it was quite a deal. And then the little dog comes to my office, and he barked at me. And I said, "Do you want water?" That's what he wanted. He wanted some water. And, I mean, when he needed to go to the bathroom, he let us know that.
Really?
Very unusual dog. So then yesterday, the man was still in my office, and he said, "Fay, I'm starving. I mean, this guy gets hungry." So I said, "I'll take you down to Norma's." I said, "What do we do with the dog?" "Oh, no, He's a service dog. He can go in. Have you ever seen anybody take a dog in a restaurant? Oh, my gosh. I mean, I don't know what to think. I'm just hysterical. I can't say anything. And but we get to the restaurant. We go in, and the lady says, is this a service dog? Oh, yes, he said it is. She said, where's his little vest? He said, I forgot it. So they seat us. The little dog is under the table, and it barks. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, because it was hungry, and it wanted to tell everybody it was hungry. And he told her, said, fix the dog some chicken breast. So fix the dog chicken breast. And here's this little plate under the table. And people keep coming by talking to the dog. I'm going, oh, my gosh. I'm so embarrassed. I want to get under the table with the dog. That's where I wanted to be.
Oh, wow.
I'm hysterical. And so then the little dog thinks the chicken isn't good enough. So it barks at him and wants the roast beef. So it gives the dog roast beef.
No.
I'm serious. This little dog ate roast beef right there at the table. I mean, I'm going, oh, my gosh. I'm wondering what people are thinking, you know, and I know what I'm thinking. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
But the man is from California.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yes, he's not from Texas. So I imagine they do things differently there.
I would imagine they do.
Can you imagine going to lunch with a dog?
I have a feeling I know who wears the pants in that household.
That dog does, let me tell you.
Yes.
I was just in a state of shock yesterday. I'm going, oh, my gosh, a dog is eating with us.
Wow. Just like regular people, roast beef, mashed potatoes, chicken, carrots.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hysterical. I've never seen a dog eat like that. And it wasn't enough. He asked for roast three times. He loved the roast. He had a great lunch.
Wow. Sounds like he had a better lunch than most people.
Than most people. This is a gourmet dog. He's the best in the world. I mean,
gourmet.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is a gourmet dog.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Well, it made my day interesting, let me say that.
Yeah, clearly he wears the theoretical pants in that house. I can see who runs
That's the place.
That's awesome.
And, and this dog was just right at home in my office. You know, he laid down under my desk.
And he barks and tells whenever he wants something. He can tell you. Like, go outside.
He tells you. He barks. But can you imagine a dog barking in a restaurant? I was humiliated.
I was going,
oh, my gosh.
Everybody looked, didn't they?
And everybody looked. And I don't know if they like dogs or not, but it was quite a deal. And here the waitress is catering to this dog. and then he had to have water.
Oh, yeah.
He was thirsty after eating, so she had to go get him some water and fix it.
Oh, wow. I bet that was a sight to see. And you were at the table.
I was at the table cringing. I was just cringing and going, oh, my gosh. I'm just not used to that. I've never...
Well, yeah.
With a dog and eating with a dog.
Golly. It's not very often you go into a restaurant and all of a sudden you're in the middle of your lunch and you hear a dog barking. You look over.
I know. Can you imagine? These people heard the dog barking. Oh, my gosh.
I would imagine your face turned 9 shades of red.
I think it did, and I wanted to get under the table with the dog. I felt like I'd be safer down there. I'd feel better about my situation.
Yeah, you were probably wagging your head. Am I fixing to get a mob on me? What's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if somebody would say something. I just didn't know what was going to happen, and I'm being very quiet. I'm just going, oh, my gosh. I've got my head down.
You're thinking to yourself, I wish I was invisible. I wish I was invisible.
For lunch to be over. I was just praying that it was going to be quick.
Oh, wow. But nobody got mad, though, you said. They all came and talked to
you? Oh, nobody. Everybody was very pleasant, very nice, and people coming into the restaurant as they walked by, they talked to the dog and petted it.
And you're thinking, all right, I'm okay.
That's right.
Nothing bad's going
to
happen.
But I was so shocked when the dog barked. I wasn't expecting this dog to bark in the restaurant.
I know it.
Oh, my gosh.
It's one thing to kind of fly under the radar, but he barks and brings attention. It's like, oh, Lord. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. He brought attention to everybody. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh. Well, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to you. So that's got to go in the book.
That's right. It just goes in our book. I mean, things happen, and it happens to me. I don't know. I don't know what I did, but, you know, things are interesting.
That's funny.
But other than that, it was a great day.
Good.
You know, I worked at the office till 7 o'clock, two nights in a row.
Jeez.
And I don't ever do that.
I know
but,
that.
Since he's from out of town, you know, I was gracious, and I didn't tell him till 7 o'clock that I was leaving. I was going home.
You know,
I'd had it. I'd had enough work.
This day's got to end now.
I said, it has got to end. I just, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
And, you know, at 7 o'clock, the sun is so bright.
Oh.
You're driving in the sun. And I knew I was going to be driving in the sun, so I was wanting to leave, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It's right in your face and everything.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So, anyway, that's my story for the week, how to entertain guests from out of town.
Oh, my goodness. I would have never guessed that would happen in a million years. But it's kind of funny.
I wouldn't have guessed it in a million either. I mean, if somebody said today this is going to happen to you, I wouldn't have believed it. Because I would have said, no, there's not any dog going to go to a restaurant.
No.
And by golly, I was wrong.
You always have weird things that happen. You have weird stories all the time. It's kind of cute. It's funny.
I know. Trouble follows me around, you know?
It does.
It's on every corner, and I don't see it till it happens.
Trouble is your middle name. This is Your Money with Faye Trouble Bagby.
That's right. I mean, you know, and in the meantime, I was filling policies, doing my job, trying to get things moving, you know. And we filled that breast cancer policy that I talked about last week. And yesterday they were working on it, and I said, well, how's it coming? And they said, we're finished. We're through. And somebody else wanted to get in it. It was too late.
Oh, no.
But that's, I think, going to be a really good policy because it's short. It's, you know, 20 months. And she went to Mexico, and you know what that means.
Yep.
That she will not survive this. It's in too many places already. So, anyway, we feel that. We feel two other policies. The Barry Chase policy, that is filled also in case anybody got an invitation on Barry Chase, it's filled.
Mm.
So we fill both of those. We've got two more to fill this next week. So we'll be hitting that running on Monday morning.
Wow.
Trying to get these finished.
Great. So it's been a big week then.
It's been a big week. We're still waiting on some maturities that have not got to the bank. We're waiting on a death certificate on that $2 million one. As soon as we get that death certificate, we'll get it right over to the carrier and get the money on that. But we didn't have any more maturities this week. That was only one we found out about.
Hmm. I mean, $2 million, that's a pretty good size one. But I would imagine, I don't know how many people are in there.
Probably 15.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's 15. Yeah, it takes quite a few to fill a $2 million or a $5 million. Years ago when we did that one that was like $20 million, it took everybody, I mean, that was available. I think it was 50 people went in that.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Good
so
Lord.
That's right. It takes a lot of people when you're filling a policy. $1 million or $2 million is easy, but $5 million or $10 million gets a little hard. Because you've got to contact so many people in order to get it done.
Yeah. I would imagine it takes a lot of coordination.
Yes, it does. And you have to send out all the invitations. You've got to give them the medical. And then you've got to make sure they got the email. And lots of ours, as you know, they don't read emails. So then we have found out lately that if we'll send them a text, they will go and look at their email. So we're having to send that text out to help them out.
Yeah. Well, it works, though.
It's working better, yes. It's working much better.
Good.
Sending that out. And so then they will go look at their email. Because a lot of them don't look at an email maybe for 2 days or three. It's not like me that reads 100 emails a day.
Well, yeah. I mean, your job is like literally at the computer all day. So you see that thing, you know, when it has, you know, new emails that come in, you know, it's right in front of your face. Most other people are out doing stuff, traveling, ranching, shopping, whatever we do.
Or working. They're working and they're not even near a computer. Yes.
Yeah. So.
And I understand that.
Yeah. aside from that, what was that huge one you were talking about? Was that was like $20 million from like a couple of years ago? Is that?
Yes, it was several years ago. Yes, we did really well on that.
Aside from that one, what's the biggest policy that generally you would go into on an average basis? We're talking about maybe two,
$5 million.
$5 million.
Okay. Yes, we've done it. We did a $5 million 2 months ago.
Yeah. I remember that one.
That was the Bildner one, B-I-L-D-N-E-R. Yes, that was a $5 million one.
Are those
and
common?
And we raised the money probably in a week and a half.
Oh, that's, well, is that fast or is that good?
That's pretty good.
Sounds good.
We just had to find everybody.
How many people would go into a $5
million? Oh, a lot. Probably 25.
Oh.
Probably 25.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it probably took 25 to do that.
On an average basis, what would you say is probably, you know, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, so this is just a rough guess, but on an average basis, what do you think is probably the a typical policy amount? I know the $20 million and the $5 million, they're kind of exceptions, but what would be a
usually
normal?
About $1 million. We do a lot of $1 million policies.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how many people typically go in a $1 million policy?
10.
Oh. Well, geez, I'm running some simple math in my head. You should probably correct me, but I'm going to throw this out here anyway. It seems like at about $1 million policy, with as many that you have coming in, it seems like it's a pretty good rotation for anybody to get into policies pretty much at any time during the year. Am I saying that?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
And it depends how much cash they've got. If they want to do three or four policies, or if they want to do one large policy. I have a lot of people will say, we'd like for you to put 50, and they may say, no, I want to put 125 in. Because they've got so much, and they want the big returns. Then I've got a lot of people may say, no, 50's okay, or even 40. But we've got some people that, you know, like 40,000 is a good amount for them. But most people, 50 to 75 is the average. That's what we do all the time. 50 to 75, that's the normal amount.
And how many policies on average are the investors who I guess get the most return, who are doing the best, how many policies are they in, average speaking?
A lot. They've got a minimum of 10, and a lot of people got 20.
Oh, wow. So there's always something that's going on.
Yes. There's always policies renewing. We've also got, their money comes in. We place it. We do it again and again. And this is how they're getting all that interest in, because a lot of people are getting a lot of interest.
So when somebody comes over to you for the first time as a new investor and they say, okay, Faye, I want to get into life settlements. I've been hearing you talk about this. It really intrigues me. It's really conservative. I like the fact that, you know, the principal is protected and all these things. I love all the opportunities. I want to get in. Say somebody's got, I don't know. Oh, maybe I should ask. This should be a question. About how much do people come over with for the first time? Let's start there.
Probably 200,000 to 300,000.
Okay.
Or they may say I've got $500,000 in the bank, but I only want to put 100 in now. Because a lot of people are testing us. So they may just put 100,000 to see how it works. Then when they see how it works, then they bring more money over. And then customers that have known us a long time, they're always bringing us a check for more because they've got it. They want to invest more. So they'll just bring a check to the office and we send it in.
So those that start a little bit and then bring in over more, it's basically a fact that a little is good, more must be better, and it is.
And it is. And then we have people that are related to people that already have money with us. I got a call from several people this week. Well, I've got three relatives who are with you. They're doing good. I want to put some money if I can do it as well.
So when
because a lot of people are related that are with us. And I sometimes forget who all's related to who. But we've got a lot of people that are related to other people.
You know that I know you've talked about referrals a lot, but it really does. It's a big deal because when people refer something, you've got to be pretty passionate. You've got to be pretty sure because you can, you know, families can break up, friendships can break up, neighbor relationships can break up very easy over recommending something that's terrible. You know, especially
that's
when
right.
it comes to money, it's you can't really go to, you know, a family member and say, you know, geez, I've been investing in life settlements with Faye for, you know, 5 years and I've made, you know, X amount of money. You should try it. And if it doesn't work, you know, people will say, geez, I took over $200,000 and, you know, something terrible happened. That's not the case. It's always, you know, people are, you know, recommending people because they've done well. And so they're, I would imagine, probably appreciative of the referral. You know, hey, thanks for the tip. Appreciate it. It's working out well. We're starting to make a lot of money. I would imagine, you know, that they get that kind of feedback. And those referrals are a big deal. So
they are a big deal. And we get a lot of referrals. As I said, a lot of people send their coworkers over. A lot of people with oil companies. Everybody knows everybody. They send, you know, a lot of people to us. Then we have the relative thing where they send their relatives over. I've got a lot of people that the mother and father are with us. You know, the daughter or son is with us. All kinds of people. Then my friend Rick, who's been with us a long, long time. He has two sisters, and they're in some policies with us.
Oh.
Not as heavily as Rick. Rick has been with us a long time. He invests on a continuing basis. He makes a lot of interest, and he's a friend. And like someone said the other day, most of these people are friends, and that's true. A lot of them are not just clients, but they're friends of mine as well.
Yeah.
So we talk to a lot of them on a regular basis.
Yeah, you know people, and you know about, you know, their lives, their families, things that they're doing, places they're going, the stuff that they're into. So
yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of friendships that you've built over the years just by doing this.
And we know a lot about them.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said the other day something about it. I said, oh, well, let me tell you about him. You know, I said, let me tell you. Oh, God.
A lot of clients know each other. Yeah. So
that's right. They do.
It's a big deal. Let me ask you real quick, for new investors that come over, say, I don't know, say a new investor comes over with $100,000, and they will just want to kind of try it out, like you were saying. They'll try some and then see how it works, and then usually they'll bring over more and get into more policies. How do they usually, quote, try it? Do they say, okay, here's $100,000, put me in a policy, and I'll wait until it matures and then try others, or do they
Sometimes they'll do that, or they may bring enough over to do, you know, more than just two policies. If it's $100,000, that's enough for two policies, you know, investing $50,000 a policy. And then a lot of times they'll bring $250,000, $300,000 to start with. And that way we can put them in a bunch of policies right off. But it depends. If they've been listening to us for 2 or 3 years, they're probably going to bring more than $100,000. If it's somebody that hasn't been listening that long, they're probably going to bring $100,000 and try us and see if they like us. But anybody that's been listening a long time, they're going to bring a lot more than that.
I know you don't ever pressure anybody. You want people to be comfortable
nope.
with it. You just, you let them, you give them the facts and then they decide and that's really where it ends. And so if they want to get into two, cool. If they want to get into four, that's great. If they want to get into 10, that's totally up to them. It's their decision. But what would you recommend from just from a data-driven perspective only? What would you recommend?
Well,
would
they
be a
need
good
several
point?
Policies. You need several. You've got to be diversified, even in this. You've got to have several that are coming due at different times. You can't sit there and wait on one policy to mature. You need several that's going to be maturing at different times. So, you know, it's better to have several, and then each one will mature at a different time. You'll get interest all along, and that's the way to do it. You don't want to start with just one policy. That's not good.
Yeah.
You need to be diversified where you've got something coming, something happening all the time.
Do you ever get people that come over for the first time and want to get into life settlements to say, here's 300,000, put me in 6 policies. Does that ever happen?
Yep, I do that. Yeah, we do that a lot of times.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. And then
I tell them, I'll start with this one I've got available today. I'll get you in as many as I can, as quickly as I can.
Cool.
And as they come available, we put them in. Now, a first-timer is hesitant. Remember this. So I may send them one, and they may say, I'm not going to take that one. And I'm going, what? Are you crazy? So then I'll call them and say, okay, why did you turn it down? Well, I didn't think it. I go, let's go over it. You know, it's this many months. This is how many places the cancer is. It's already metastasized in 5 places. Do you think this guy's going to survive?
Mm.
You know? And so, you know, going over that, me reading them the medical, then they understand it better, and then they'll jump in.
So you educate people. So when they come over the first time.
Well, yeah,
and
they need to be pretty well educated on this. And, you know, we've got every kind of person in the world that invests with us. We've got the president of a couple of oil companies. We've got doctors. We've got farmers. All people from every sector of life. We've got business people. And everybody invests differently. Everybody's threshold's different. A lot of people, need the interest. And then a lot of people say, look, it's an IRA. I'm not going to use this money for years.
Hmm.
So it depends where they're at.
All right.
And then a lot of people bring us money as they retire. So a lot of times we get a lump sum from like an oil company. We may get $1 million, $2 million, or $300,000, you know. We have a lot of people with us.
All right. We should probably also mention real quick that when we talk about educating people and people looking at the policy saying, I'm not really sure, and then you kind of call them and walk through what the reports mean, it doesn't mean that anybody has to be, you know, medically trained. There has no medical knowledge has to. You don't have to go to school. You don't have to be a doctor to understand it. It's all very clearly laid out in layman's terms, and so people can, you know, anybody can understand.
Well, the doctors have already laid it out.
Yeah.
You know, the doctors and then the people that do the LAs, they send us the backup. In other words, if you ask questions, I can go and look it up. I've got the medical records. In addition to the LA. So the medical records, and by the way, I did this the other day for the first time. The LA company that sent it was very shallow in what they gave. And I go, that's not good. And I went to the medical reports and underlined the actual medical reports from the doctor where they could see what was really wrong with this person. Mm. And I think that helped them a lot. And I may start doing that because if there's any where they can't understand it, you need to give them a clearer picture. And that's what I did.
Hmm. Well, that sounds helpful. That was great.
I thought it was a good idea.
Hmm.
I figured if it wasn't enough for me, it wasn't enough for anybody else either.
Yeah.
So I went and got the medical records, looked at what all the doctors said, and then sent it to them.
Hmm. Cool. All right. So it's a very well-informed type of investment. It's not like you're just willy-nilly going in and saying, yeah, why not? Let's flip a coin. It's all data-based. It's all very well-documented. And you've got expert, opinions. Is it right to say an expert opinion or is
yes.
it
well,
analysis?
Yes. We're doing a lot better than we were. You know, we've got a lot better LAs, companies. We've got better reports, and things are coming due quicker and on time.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. So we have strived all along to get better and better, and I think we are. Once the old policies are gone, they're gone forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, we've still got the Denton policy, and he's supposed to pass away this year. He's turning 94. I mean, we're not trying to send him any faster, but we don't want to slow him down, I can assure you. I mean, as I've always said, old people are wonderful, but we do not want to buy their policies. They're not sick, and we learned that the hard way. And we've got the Denton policy left, and that's it.
Yeah, those old people are tough.
They're tough. I mean, they went through the Depression. They went through World War II, and they are tough.
Yeah.
So they're hanging on, and I don't know what he's doing, but I am checking on Mr. Denton right now. That's one of my goals, is to find out where he's at.
All right. Well, good deal. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is...
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh,
remember him?
Yes.
The greatest guitarist I guess there ever was. I mean, I think he was.
Yeah.
He was great. He had a short life, as you know.
Yeah.
He was dead at 35, but he had a wonderful career. You know, his dad was 16 when he went to World War II. He had a tough dad, dropped out of school, as I said, at 16, went to the Navy. And then he got married. Their first son, Jimmy, was born in 51. Stevie was born at Methodist Hospital in Dallas in 1954. His dad was an asbestos worker, tough old boy. He was a drinker, abuser. He terrorized his family, his friends. He had a bad temper. And I think it's because he quit school at 16 and, went to the Navy. And that, you know how tough it was. The World War II boys were the toughest in the world. I don't think we've ever had anybody quite that tough.
Yeah.
And, it affected him. He became a shy, an insecure boy. And I think it was because his dad was yelling at him all the time. And, he just wanted to sneak off and survive, I think.
Yeah.
And his brother, Jimmy, played guitar. So he was watching him. And he started out playing drums, saxophone, but for his 7th birthday, he received a toy guitar from Sears. Can you imagine? And he learned to play by ear, and he would follow songs along, particularly Wine, 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 and Thunderbird. And he listened to all these blues artists all the time. Muddy Waters, and you know how good he was.
Mm-hmm.
Albert King, Otis Rush, and Jimi Hendrix.
Ooh.
So he was listening to jazz. He was listening to blues. And in 1963, he finally got an electric guitar. Well, that was the start of it. He started playing it, and he joined his first band. And it was called the Shantones. And they went to a talent show, and it was held at Dallas Hill Theater. And these guys he was playing with, they had a Jimmy Reed song. They couldn't even play it all the way through. So he left that band, and he joined the Brooklyn Underground. And he was playing professionally. as a kid at bars and clubs. And he later got a Jimmy Fender broadcaster, and they traded it in. So he left home at 16, just quit school, left, and went and got a job at a local hamburger stand. He was washing dishes, dumping trash, making 70 cents an hour.
Oh, wow.
And he fell into a barrel of grease. And he said, I'm giving this up. I am going to go and start a music career. And in 1969, he left the Brooklyn Underground and joined a band called Southern Distributor. And he learned Yardbirds Boogie, and he played the song at an audition. And the drummer commented, now this, he's 14 years old. He said, we auditioned him on Jeff's Boogie, which is really fast instrumental guitar. He played it note for note at 14.
Wow. That's impressive.
And yeah. And he played pop rock covers. And he told him, he said, I want to play blues also. And they said, son, you'll never be able to make a living at blues. And so he left that band. I mean, he's just a kid, and he's in these bands. And later that year, Bassett, Tommy Shannon, walked into a Dallas club and heard him. And he was fascinated by the skillful playing, and he described it as incredible, even at 14. So Shannon borrowed a bass guitar, and the two jammed. And with within just a few years, they were playing together in a band called Cracker Jack. Then about 1970, he joined a band called Liberation. It was like a nine-piece group. I had a horn section, and he was playing with them. And they were so impressed by his playing, the guy that was running it, the original guitarist, became the Bassett and moved down in order for Stevie to be the main man.
Wow.
At that young age. And so they performed at the Adolphus in Dallas. And ZZ Top asked them to perform.
Really?
Well, you know who? Oh, yeah. And they did the song Thunderbird. And they described the performance as they tore the house down.
Wow. I could imagine
it
how cool
awesome.
That
was. It was awesome. They said he was so awesome. So that's how he met ZZ Top. He later played with ZZ Top.
Did he really?
Yeah. He later joined him.
I didn't know
so,
that.
Yeah, he joined him, but everybody that heard him, you know, wanted to be around him, wanted him to play with him because he was so incredible. And so then he moves down to Austin, and, you know, Austin is the music capital of Texas. Almost everybody passes through Austin if they have any talent whatsoever. And so he performed at the Montreux Jazz Festival with David Bowie, saw him play. And so David Bowie contacted him and said, I want you to play guitar on Let's Dance. And so then he was discovered by John Hammond, who had a major label at Epic Records. So he signed him at that point in his life to a record deal. Well, heck, within months, he achieved mainstream success. He did Texas Flood. He did a lot of network appearances. Concert tours. He became the leading figure in the blues revival of the 80s. He could play behind his back. He could pluck the strings with his teeth. I mean, you know, he became famous in Europe as well as here. But then, you know, he struggled with alcohol all of his life and drug addiction, and it affected him. He finally went to rehab, and he started touring again with Double Trouble. That was his band, was Double Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And he used them almost all the time. So he, in his own right, he's one of the most successful guitarists in history. And as you know, what happened to him, they were leaving a concert, and he was in a helicopter, and him and five members of the band, you know, were killed. So his performance as a musician and famous only lasted 7 years.
Jeez. That's a lot of stuff to cram into 7 years, though.
Yeah, he crammed a lot into 7 years. and became very, very famous. And then Austin, you know, that's where they always do things for you. Then the mayor and the governor put up a statue of him. They did all kinds of things. And after he was dead, he sold, you know, a tremendous amount of records after his death. I forget how many records they sold after he was dead, but it was thousands and thousands of records were sold even after he was dead.
Yeah, a lot of big artists like that after they, especially if it's something tragic and sudden, record sales will go through the roof. Same thing with like Michael Jackson and all the other ones that died suddenly. So I didn't. Did you say that he actually played guitar on David Bowie's Let's Dance?
Yes.
I didn't.
You didn't know that?
No, I don't. I guess I didn't know that. Maybe I'm the only one that didn't know that. But wow.
Yeah, he did that on Let's Dance. But Ann Richards proclaimed Stevie Ray Vaughan Day. You know, it was held at the Texas Theater. And then in 1993, there was a memorial statue of Vaughan unveiled on Auditorium Shores, and the first public monument of a musician in Austin.
Wow, that's cool.
And they established the Stevie Ray Vaughan Memorial Scholarship Fund at the school where he had went to school. And as I said, he knew everybody. Eric Clapton, David Crosby, you know, it's just amazing all the things he did in such a short time.
It really is. I mean, I didn't realize, I guess, that his whole span lasted 7 years. You think of somebody like that, and it's like, wow, it's just, you know,
they awarded
icon.
Him five W.C. Handy Awards. He was inducted to the Blues Hall of Fame after all this happened. He was named as an honorary admiral in the Texas Navy.
Wow. That's cool.
His number one song was Crossfire.
Mm-hmm.
He sold 15 million albums after his death.
Really?
15 million, yeah.
I like his version of, what's the Stevie Wonder? Superstition. I like his version of Superstition.
And they said he was ranked as the 7th most 100 greatest guitar players of all time.
Really? Number 7 on the list of 100?
Yes.
Wow. I have...
And they inducted him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2008.
Hmm. That is cool. You ever seen, I don't know if you've ever seen him in concert or ever seen footage of him play. I mean, he would just attack the guitar. He was a maniac in a good way. But I've never seen anybody just play like, it's like he becomes or became the guitar itself. I mean, he was like part of the instrument. It's fascinating to watch his playing. It's just, it's incredible.
And can you imagine this little boy started at 7 years old with a toy guitar and taught himself to play.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the greatest ones always taught themselves. They didn't go to a fancy music school, didn't spend any time doing that. He just taught himself because of his brother, and he watched him play and said, you know, I want to do this, and did it. I mean, I don't know very many people could have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. A lot of the great ones are self-taught. They didn't go to like a music school and learn the theory of music and all that. They just kind of picked it up. And there's this thing that they have, this sense, this whatever that is, something special that just you just pick up and just start playing. It's fascinating to watch the.
And when he was 14, everybody loved to see him play, and all these guys joined him. That's what was amazing to me.
Yeah.
And ZZ Top, you know, saw him play one time and wanted him to play on his things.
Jeez.
And then later, he joined him in his band.
Wow.
And it's just amazing to me at 14 that everybody was so impressed by what he could do. And I guess he spent all of his spare time, you know, learning the guitar and playing it.
Yeah.
You know, he spent all that time. And then he went to Austin, and that's where it all started.
You know, and it also sounds like his early childhood, it sounds like he had a lot to overcome.
Yes.
There. So, you know, it probably helped that he had music to kind of, I guess, maybe escape into. And so
I think
you,
that's it.
Yeah.
Like you say,
golly.
If he hadn't had his music, I don't know what the kid would have done, because he was shy, introverted. I know he was scared. And, you know, he was by himself a lot. And that guitar helped him.
Yeah.
Express himself.
Jeez.
And he spent hours and hours, you know, on that first guitar that wasn't worth a lot, you know? And he managed to play it.
I still remember the morning.
It was old.
That they made the announcement. I'd gone to work, and my friend Ray, he worked there, and he came in, and he's like, hey, did you hear about Stevie Ray Vaughan? I'm like, no. And he told me what happened. I'm like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. I mean, I still remember that day like it was yesterday. Golly,
right,
that's such
and
a
I
shock.
Remember when they announced it. I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
And they announced that helicopter had went down. As you remember, they were running late, and they said, the only way we can do this is, you know, take a helicopter. And four of the band was with him. And, of course, it went down. That was, as you remember, it was in East Troy, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And they had played at the Alpine Valley Music Theater. Mm. And, of course, it was pilot error.
Yep.
And most of it is.
Jeez.
But, Rolling Stone ranked him as the seventh greatest guitarist of all time.
Wow, that's and that's such a it's such a big deal, because there's so many great people. We could sit here. And,
yeah, there's so many of them.
Yeah.
If you can come in seventh in the world, I mean, you have really accomplished something.
Yeah, especially if you can do it in such a short amount of time, for only 7 years.
And in that period, he had the drug addiction and the alcoholism. And, you know, he said how that started. His dad was leaving all that alcohol around, and they weren't home. And he would go in there, and he started getting that alcohol and drinking it. And he was seven.
Wow.
And that's how he became an alcoholic.
Wow. So the groundwork was laid for that. It's 7 years old.
It's 7 years old.
Wow.
And he had no idea what it was going to do to his body and his mind. And he only did it when he could sneak it. So thank goodness it wasn't worse than it was, but it did make him an alcoholic. And then he finally had to go to rehab, and then he got back on the road and was better than ever.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. But if he hadn't went to rehab, he'd have been dead a lot sooner.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows? He may not have even accomplished what he did. So now, you know, I don't want to take away from his talent, but it always seems like when people are cut short, like such talented musicians like that, when things are cut short, all of a sudden they're like frozen in time. And it's just like, you know, they don't, you always wonder, well, what could they have done? And then it's like, well, some of what they did such a lot in such a short amount of time, that itself speaks for, you know, the amount of talent that they have or had.
That's right. And, you know, a little boy that's that talented and did it all by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, and then I loved it when he worked for 70 cents an hour in that hamburger stand. And that was short-lived.
Yeah.
And he knew then that the only thing he was going to get it was his music. And then he did all those, went to those talent shows in Dallas, and that one band couldn't even play the whole song. And that just tore it. He quit them immediately. If you can't play all the way through a song, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
That wasn't a good sign. And he quit each band that he thought was just absolutely not worth doing.
Yeah.
And then went on to play with some of the greatest. Once they heard him, they wanted him, every one of them.
Yeah.
Said, you know, I want you on this. And then, you know, on Les Dance, he played on that.
I didn't even know that. I didn't know he'd played on that. I didn't know he had any association with ZZ Top at all. This is new to me for some reason. Wow.
Yeah, and he later joined his band.
fascinating. It's really, really fascinating.
And Stevie played with, they all wanted him to play with them. All the greats invited him to play. That's what was amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, most people wouldn't take a young boy in, 14, 16 years old. But he was that good.
Yeah.
That they all wanted him to play with him.
Yeah.
So, and like they said, he tore the house down when he was playing with him. It was just more fantastic.
Yeah, I bet that. You know, it's one thing when you're kind of like an okay kind of band or something like that. You get somebody like that in with that kind of talent. It's like, hey, maybe he can raise us up. But when you're already iconic, and you've already made it, and you don't need an extra person to raise your profile, and you just invite somebody in like that, it's a big deal. That's a big stamp of approval. So that's.
I loved it when that one band. The guy that was supposed to be taking the lead, he backed down and took the second position for him because he was so good.
Now, that's knowing when to bow out.
That's when you could just say, I'm sorry, I'm not qualified for this. But I was so impressed when he said, let him take over.
Yeah,
you know?
No doubt.
Wow. You can flat play.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, so, definitely one of the greatest for good reason. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
All right, before we go, we should probably go over the risks of a life settlement. I know we like to cover those every time. So there used to be three, but now we're kind of down to two. So what's the biggest risk?
The biggest risk is it can go over. If it goes over, you have to pay the premiums. Of course, we're going to tell you up front how much the premium is. You'll always know. There's no surprises, but that's your biggest risk. The other risk is it's not liquid till it matures. You don't get paid, in other words, till that person passes away. And that's when you get paid. And remember, you must be accredited to do this. You must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your home. And everybody always says, Faye, why do we have to be accredited? The government says so.
Yeah, it's a government
thing. It's not my saying that. It's the government.
It's not
me, Faye. And the minimum investment, as you know, is $100,000.
Yeah. Cool. And you do escrow for premiums too, don't you? Do you want to?
We escrow not only the premiums, but 12 months more. And I don't know why I never did say that. So if it's 20 months, we're going to escrow 32.
Cool.
So it's always going to be an extra 12 months on top of what they say. So that gives you plenty of time to where it won't cost you anything. Where you'll be out of there before the premium runs out.
Good.
And lots of times, it doesn't even take all the premium. Sometimes, as you know, if they die early, we didn't even spend it. So, you know, it's a good thing to always have that extra 12 months. And you may not need it, but we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so for new investors, it sounds like you've got some good things on the horizon for policies and availability and whatnot. I assume you also have some availability to talk to some new people, kind of go over the process, explain some questions that they may have this coming week, right? I assume it's business as usual.
Yes, the first thing to do is call the office, make an appointment. If you've been listening to us for a long time, you know, you're just going to call, you're going to come in, you're going to fill out the papers to open the account at Nevada Trust. Remember, you have to have an account at Nevada Trust to do this because they're the trustee. They handle the money. They pay the premiums. When somebody dies, the money comes to them and they put it in your account. So it's always the bank handles your cash and you. We don't touch your cash. We don't handle your cash. That's why we've been in business so long.
Cool. All right, Faye, then one last time, what is your appointment for people to, or what is your number for people to call and make an appointment?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.